I'm certainly glad to be here this evening and have the opportunity to hear our brother Dwayne bring a few words to us this night. I'd ask that you'd give him your prayerful and your careful attention at this time. Dwayne?
Thank you, Andy. It's good to be here with you tonight, and good to see each one of you here. The title of my sermon today is What's Most Important in Life? And the world will tell us a lot of things that it thinks is important, won't it? It'll tell us what it thinks is most important. It'll try to lead us one way or another. It does that continually, doesn't it? But we have to find out what is truly important for our spiritual welfare. Which direction we will go. The world will try to influence us. Some of the things that the world will try to influence us in will destroy us spiritually. But other things are more simple little things where it just tries to lead us one direction or another. I see this commercial occasionally, and it's talking about Anna's, which is, I guess it sells towels and linens and that type of thing. And you know, supposedly they have a good price on this stuff. And they say in their commercial that everybody's talking about Anna's. But in reality, probably, nobody's talking about Anna's, are they? But they're trying to convince us that everybody out there is talking about this place. It has wonderful prices. So they're trying to get us to come in there and sell us towels. There's another commercial. I don't even know what they're advertising. But you can call this number. And I'm not sure if it's for... how to buy stocks or to buy real estate. I think it's something like that, but I'm not even sure. But in their ad, they say to call this number, and they will rush this to us. In other words, trying to convince us that this thing is so important that we have that they're going to rush it to us and get it there to us as quickly as possible. Trying to make us think that this is important, when in reality, it probably isn't. You know, recently I've been going through a bunch of papers at work. And, you know, as I go through these papers, many of them are no longer important. They are totally worthless. And in these papers, I found some interview questions. And many years ago, I was given the assignment to write the interview questions for all of the hourly job descriptions in our department, which there probably was about a dozen of them, I would say. It took me a lot of time to do all this. But as I looked at those questions, they're of no value today. We don't use them any longer. You know, in those questions, we asked people things that related to this person's, their knowledge, their experience, and their abilities. That's what all of these questions revolved around. In other words, how good a... is this person able to do this job? Which seems like that would be a good thing, doesn't it? That we would want to know that. But today we have completely different questions. A completely different philosophy. People that are in business, they probably know what I'm talking about. A different philosophy today. These questions today are focused on their character and their personality more than their experience. They have found out over time that you can train somebody to do a job, but if they have a bad attitude or a bad personality, you can't change that. You can't correct that. A whole different shift. So this is what our interview questions are like today. They have different categories. One of them is customer focus, integrity and trust, respect for others, teamwork, safety, and job knowledge, which is what all the other questions used to revolve around. Now we have one question on job knowledge. One question. I'll read a few of these. Please give us an example of a situation when you provided a higher level of service than the customer expected. Please give us an example of a situation where you felt you did not provide a customer with good service. What happened, and what were you able to do to recover from the situation? Don't you hate these questions? I hate these questions. This is what they have to answer. They're coming in there to be a metal fabricator or a machinist. This is what they have to go through. Finding out their character, their integrity. Describe an example of a situation when you were asked to do something that challenged your ethical standards of right and wrong. What happened and how did you handle it? Describe a situation when a coworker became angry with you, and describe what you did to respond and recover from the situation. You'll find all kinds of things have changed like this today. Your automobile insurance, it used to be all on your driving record. That's how they decided how much to charge you. Now what's the most important thing? It's your credit score. Your credit score. That's what they go by more than anything else. Because they have found out that people that pay their bills on time have less accidents. They found this relationship. So I put all this work into writing these questions. Did I waste my time? No, it was a requirement for my job. It was what they asked me to do. But these questions are no longer used. They have no value today. I threw them all in the garbage. The big scheme of things are not very important, are they? Not something that endured. Writing those questions was good for a time, but it didn't endure. You know, we can't put too much emphasis on our careers. We can't put too much importance on them. Because there's more important things in life. Yes, we have to provide for our families. The scriptures tell us that very plainly, that we have to provide for our families. We're to do a good job for our employer. We're to put in an honest day's work. We're to earn our pay. But if it takes all of our time or becomes the most important thing in our life, we're on the wrong track. Because it'll all pass away. And this is one example. There are many things in our lives similar to this that we need to be aware of and that we need to watch out for. not place too much importance on them. Not place too much importance on the things of this world. But put that importance on the spiritual things in our lives. Environmentalists, they tell us what's important, don't they? Every day they're telling us what's important. They want to save the environment, often at the expense of people. And I'm very much in favor of taking care of this earth. I think we have a responsibility to try to take care of this earth and not be wasteful and do what we can. But there's limits to that. When you start putting these things before people, you've lost track of what is important. There's a proposal right now to blow up Glen Canyon Dam that holds back Lake Powell. There's people that are promoting this as we speak. Because it's changed the ecosystem in the Grand Canyon. And there may be some fish that's lost, that becomes extinct. Yet they would jeopardize the whole Southwest United States. Could be a drought that could last forever if we did that. Plus, lose all that generation of electricity. We must realize in these all these situations that we need to place people first. And especially their souls. The welfare of their souls. You know, there's people today that want to protect animals at any cost. You know, if you kill the sick animal, they would want to put you in jail. They might put you in jail. Yet, they support abortion and call it freedom of choice. What happened there? When did that get turned upside down? When did they lose focus on what was most important? Somewhere along the road, they lost their focus. There's some people that aren't here in church tonight because they don't want to be. They don't want to be here. Somewhere along the road, they lost track of what was important. So why did you come here tonight? What were you looking for when you came here? Some may have been hoping for a short sermon. Maybe, I don't know. I told my wife it would be short. But I've told her that before, too. It doesn't always happen. I can remember when I was a kid, up in Grand Junction, there was one of our ministers that would put a little bookmark under each scripture he was going to read. So I'd sit there and I'd count those bookmarks, you know. I knew how long the service was going to be, and they'd get down to one bookmark, I knew it was about over. I wasn't quite focused on the right thing, was I? That's why I don't put them in here. So you won't know. But why are sermons and church attendance important? Why is it important for us to be here? There's lots of reasons, isn't there? Lots of reasons. Learn new things. The ministry get up here all the time and say, I don't have anything new. Which is true. But I'll bet you anything that there's people in this audience that haven't heard that before or don't remember it. Or it's told just a little different way and the light comes on. We need to be constantly reminded. If we're not reminded constantly, we forget. We need to be warned. Especially this day that we live in. We need to be warned. We need to know what's going on in the world. We need to know what's coming so we can be prepared. We need to be inspired. Inspired in our lives. Encouraged. Encouraged to make changes in our life. To look into our lives and see what we need to do better. It applies to all of us. It applies to me. There's many things I need to do better. But I need to be diligently working on them. And when you come here week after week and keep hearing these things, it inspires you and helps you to do better, to be renewed, to escape from the world. Believe me, Satan and the world will lead us to destruction if we allow it. To make us stronger. The world can suck the life out of you if you allow it. It can make you weak. That's why we need to be here all the time to get our batteries recharged. Fellowship. Fellowship with our brothers and sisters. How important that is. And I can assure you, no matter how important that is today, it's going to be more important tomorrow and in the future. This fellowship with our brothers and sisters in the Church of Christ. As we come together here in like faith, if we quit attending church, quit studying, we would forget. We would forget what we're supposed to do. We would forget those wonderful stories. Especially if we were letting the world lead us in another direction. It's important. I'm sure most of you that have a computer have Excel on it. But you can do spreadsheets. I know a little bit about Excel. But if you learned everything there was to know about Excel, which I can assure you would be a lot, a lot. And you were proficient at it. What do you think would happen if you didn't use it for 20 years? It'd be lost, wouldn't it? I know at work, if I don't use it for a month or so, I'm already scratching my head. And you know, how do I do this? How do I do that? I took lots of math in school. I took geometry and algebra and trigonometry. I learned these subjects. I even tried calculus and analytical geometry. But I hit the wall on that one. That was beyond me. I dropped out. But I learned these other geometry, algebra, trigonometry. I can't do it today. Very little. Why not? Because I haven't used it for 30 years. Haven't used it. I forgot. How many of you know what a slide rule is? Quite a few. Some of the younger people probably don't know what I'm talking about. This is a slide rule. It's got nice little belt loops and stuff. You could hang it on your belt. I took slide rule in college. I have one credit hour in slide rule. Probably back in 1971. But also people, probably the younger people don't realize, when I was taking slide rule, there were no calculators. Can you young people imagine a world without calculators? No calculators. We had slide rules. I almost couldn't find it. It was stuffed up in a box somewhere. This is a collector's item today. That's worth money, believe me. They probably haven't made them for 30 years. And I thought, well, you could do all kinds of stuff with this. You can see all kinds of numbers on both sides, and there's this thing slides back and forth, and this thing slides back and forth. And I passed this class. I got one credit hour. And I just thought, well, I'll look at it, and I'll see if I can do some simple things. Which multiplication is, I can remember, that was one of the most simple things. I have no idea how to do that. I can't even multiply on it now. But I could sell it for the collector's item. I can get some money out of it, I can assure you I could. Same with our spiritual life. If we don't use it, if we don't know what's important, if we don't apply it in our lives, we will lose it. I can guarantee you, you will lose it. No different than this. No different. We have to be constantly reminded. Some of these things have been preached over this pulpit time after time after time. That's what we need. We need to keep hearing that, to keep being reminded of what's important in our life. Because if we're not, we'll be lost. We'll be lost. It's so important. So important. But it's not just church attendance. It's so much more. It's our whole spiritual life, the things we do every day. I have to realize what's important in life, and focus on that. Each one of us has to find out what's important in life. We have to learn. We have to search. Because Satan and the world will tell you something different. They're going to tell you that something else is important. You know, there's some things in life that are not important at all. Not important at all. There's some things that are important for a time, and then they fade away. But the ones we need to focus on are the things that are important for eternity, that apply to our spiritual salvation. And we need to know the difference. We need to know the difference. We can't spend too much time on things that are not important. I think, you know, the people that don't attend church anymore, and we have people that live here in Phoenix that haven't attended for decades. They lost track of what was important. They lost track. You know, I think in the very near future, we're going to see many things unfold before us. And we need to be prepared for these things. We need to be prepared. And if we don't know what's important, we're not going to know how we should prepare. Let's turn over to Matthew, chapter 24, verses 6 through 8. And ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that ye be not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nations shall rise against nations, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in divers places. All these are the beginning of sorrows. I think we are in the beginning stages. The beginning stages of these sorrows. And we need to be aware. We need to be prepared. There's some articles in the paper just this last week . This talks about there shall be famines. If you're seeing your grocery bill go up, you're not alone. From subsistence farmers eating rice in Ecuador to gourmets feasting on escargot in France, consumers worldwide face rising food prices in what analysts call a perfect storm of conditions. Freak weather is a factor, but so are dramatic changes in the global economy, including higher oil prices, lower food reserves, and growing consumer demand in China and India. The world's poorest nations still harbor the greatest hunger risk. Clashes over bread in Egypt killed at least 2 people last week. Currently, if you're from Haiti, unless the government is subsidizing consumers have no choice but to cut consumption. It's a very brutal scenario, but that's what it is. No one knows that better than Eugene Thermalon, 30, a Haitian day laborer who can no longer afford pasta to feed his wife and 4 children, since the price nearly doubled to 57 cents a bag. Their only meal on a recent day was 2 cans of corn grits. Their stomachs were not even full, Thermalon said, walking toward his pink concrete house on the precipice of a garbage-filled ravine. By noon the next day, he still had nothing to feed them for dinner. Another article on the internet. Philippine activists warn about possible riots. Aid agencies across Asia worry how they will feed the hungry. Governments dig deeper every day to fund subsidies. A sharp rise in the price of rice is hitting consumers' pocketbooks and raising fears of public turmoil in the many parts of Asia where rice is a staple. Part of a surge is global food costs. Rice prices on the world market have jumped 50% in the past 2 months and at least doubled since 2004. Experts blame rising fuel and fertilizer expenses, as well as crops curtailed by disease, pests, and climate change. There are concerns prices could rise a further 40% in coming months. The U.S. Department of Agriculture forecasts global rice stocks for 2007-2008 at 72 million tons. Sounds like a lot, doesn't it? But it's the lowest since 1983-84 and about half of the peak in 2000-2001. The Philippines is facing a perfect storm, said Senator Mar Roxas, or senior maybe, president of the Liberal Party. Problems coping with rising rice prices are compounded by higher oil prices and a U.S. economic downturn, which could reduce the money sent home to families by Filipinos working in the United States. And here this sounds, in the Philippines, it sounds exactly what we've done in the United States. Philippine farmers say the country, which has become the world's largest importer of rice after being an exporter in the early 1970s, has shot itself in the foot by developing some former rice paddies for housing and golf courses and planted more lucrative crops on others. We're going to see more of this in the future. I think these supplies kind of hang on the balance. There's so many people to feed in the world today. The economy. I think most of us know that the economy's not doing too good right now, is it? We're talking about a recession. Some say we're in it. Some say we're going to be. A downturn in the economy. We don't know what the future will be. Our financial system could collapse. Our government could collapse. Some of these things we don't think they could hardly be possible. These things could happen. Our money could be gone. Bear Stearns, one of the big banks, I'm sure many of you have heard this just a week or so ago. It basically collapsed. But do you know why it collapsed? Because of greed. Subprime loans. You're taking a chance, trying to make lots of money on these subprime loans. Didn't pan out. Lots of financial institutions have found that out. I read one article, and of course you read this stuff, you don't know if it's true or not. But it said if the government hadn't stepped in on that, on Bear Stearns, and one of the other banks, Citi, I can't remember which bank bought it, one of the banks bought the shares. They said if it would have been allowed to completely collapse, that perhaps the entire financial system would have collapsed. And, you know, if you've read any articles about the Depression, that they did things after that, after the collapse of those banks, they supposedly had checks and balances in there to where that would never happen again, never happen again. But if this article is correct, it almost happened last week. I don't know where we stand in all this. I don't know. Things we need to be aware of. We've got a financial peace study class going on every Tuesday. I think that's good. I think it's good for us to prepare for the future. We need to do that. Because we don't know exactly how all these things are going to unfold or exactly when they're going to unfold. So we need to be prepared. We need to be prepared financially the best we can. Because we do need to support our families. But keep focused on the most important thing of our spiritual lives. Let's turn back a couple pages. Matthew chapter 22. Verses 34 through 38. But when the Pharisees had heard that he had put the Sadducees to silence, they were gathered together. And then one of them, which was a lawyer, asked him a question, tempting him and saying, Master, which is the greatest commandment in the law? They're asking this to Christ. What is the greatest commandment in the law? And Jesus said unto him, Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. This is what is most important. Most important in our lives. We can never forget this. To put God first. In every aspect of our lives, we've got to put God first. If we're not putting Him first, we're on the wrong track. And it's not always easy, especially with Satan out there trying to tempt us, trying to lead us away, the world trying to pull us away. If we're not careful, we can lose focus. Like the people that don't attend church anymore. I can assure you they're not putting God first. Let's turn over to Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 4 through 11. We'll read a little bit about Solomon, a wise man. I made me great works. I builded me houses, I planted me vineyards. I made me gardens and orchards, and I planted trees in them of all kind of fruits. I made me pools of water to water therewith the wood that bringeth forth trees. I got me servants and maidens, and had servants born in my house. Also I had great possessions of great and small cattle. Above all that were in Jerusalem before me, I gathered me also silver and gold and the peculiar treasure of kings and of the provinces. I got me men singers and women singers, and the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments, and that of all sorts. So I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me, and whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my portion of all my labor. We see what he put his focus on, don't we? What he was putting his focus on. Was he putting God first? Let's read the last verse, 11. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do. And behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit. And there was no profit under the sun. He realized how unimportant those things were. Those things of the world. He had great wealth. He had everything he wanted in this world. But he realized how unimportant those things were. That they had no value, no long-lasting value, no spiritual value. Let's turn back to Matthew chapter 16. So much for the short sermon. Matthew 16, 24 through 27. Then said Jesus unto his disciples, If any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. We need to deny ourselves some of these things that Solomon was talking about that have no value, and take up our cross and follow after the Master. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, and whosoever will lose his life for my sake shall find it. For what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? For what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? Gain the whole world and lose our soul. Of no value, is it? The things of this world will all pass away, and all that will be left is our soul. Our soul and the works that we performed in this life. For the Son of Man shall come in the glory of his Father with his angels, and then shall he reward every man according to his works. Each one of us will be rewarded according to our works, according to the things we've done in this life. Let's turn over to Alma 19, verses 66 and 67. This is on page 450. And it is requisite with the justice of God that men should be judged according to their works. And if their works were good in this life, and the desires of their hearts were good, that they should also, at the last day, be restored unto that which is good. We will be judged according to the works, according to the things that we do in this life. And it says here, and the desires of their heart were good. I've said this before. I think this is one of the most important things in our life, in our spiritual life, is the desires of our heart. What is deep down inside of us? What do we really want? If the desires of our heart are good, we are going to obtain eternal life. You can be assured of that. Because the desires of your heart are good. When you trip and stumble and sin, you're going to repent and want to do better. Because that is the desire. That's the main focus in your life. That is what you know is important. And if their works are evil, they shall be restored unto him for evil. Therefore, all things shall be restored to their proper order. Everything to its natural frame. Mortality raised to immortality. Corruption to incorruption. Raised to endless happiness. To inherit the kingdom of God. Or to endless misery. To inherit the kingdom of the devil. Such wonderful promises for those that serve God. Raised to endless happiness to inherit the kingdom of God. I know that's the desire of our heart. I know that's what we want. You know, in Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 1, it says, a good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of one's birth. The day of death is better than the day of one's birth. But that only applies to the righteous. Only applies to those that have served God in this life. You know, as I was doing research for this sermon, you know, you can get on Google and put this stuff on the internet and find all kinds of things. So I put in there what's most important in life. And I got something, this one says, what is really important in life? And this is by Zig Ziglar. And I'm sure many of you have heard of Zig Ziglar. I saw him one time at a seminar. And he has some good things to say. What's important in life? You clearly understand that failure is an event, not a person. That yesterday ended last night, and today is your brand new day. You know, a lot of times we hear people talk about somebody. He's a failure. He's a failure. An event. Not a person. We can fail, but we can turn that around. A new day. Tomorrow will be another new day. To make changes, to make corrections. When you know that success, a win, doesn't make you, and failure, a loss, doesn't break you. When you're filled with faith, hope, and love, and live without anger, greed, guilt, envy, or thoughts of revenge. How wonderful that is. To be filled with faith, hope, and love. We know how important those are. And to live without anger, greed, guilt, envy, or thoughts of revenge. I don't always measure up to that. I need to work on that. When you know that failure to stand for what is morally right is a prelude to being the victim of what is criminally wrong. when you've made friends of your adversaries and have gained the love and respect with those who know you best. When you understand that others can give you pleasure, but genuine happiness comes when you do things for others. When you're pleasant to the grouch, courteous to the rude, and generous to the needy. Not always easy, is it? Not always easy. But I can assure you, you can find scriptures that support these things as things that we are supposed to be doing. When you love the unlovable, give hope to the hopeless, give friendship to the friendless, and encouragement to the discouraged. When you can look back in forgiveness, forward in hope, down in compassion, and up with gratitude. When you recognize, confess, develop, and use your God-given physical, mental, and spiritual abilities to the glory of God and for the benefit of mankind. These are wonderful attributes. If we're doing these things, we're going to know what's important. What's important in life. And the last one. When you stand in front of the Creator of the universe and He says to you, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." Those are the words that we all want to hear someday. And it is my prayer that we can endeavor to know what's important in life, to know what we need to be doing, so that someday each one of us will be able to hear those words. Thank you.